Most cinephiles are movie watchers, not movie listeners, and a full appreciation of the contribution of music to the films we watch often only comes with time spent training one's mind to pay attention to the way music enhances and supports the images we see. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today has spent most of his life listening to and writing and teaching about the use of music in film. Dr. Charles Leinberger is a professor of music at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's recently returned from the annual Music and the Moving Image Conference in New York, where he presented a paper, and I'm happy to have him back in the studio today.
Good morning. Great to be here. Thank you.
Good to see you. It's been about a year, I think, since we talked about some sort of music-related topic in film. You just came back from this big conference, one that I had slipped under my radar, Music and the Moving Image Conference. Sounds like heaven for someone who's into music and film.
Yeah, it is. It's an international conference. There's people from all over the world researching music in film, music in television, music in video games.
Of course.
Some of us are music theorists, some are film scholars, and a few of them are gamers who are not just music scholars, but also have been playing video games all their lives.
Yes, my youngest son is way into gaming, and he reads all about the industry, and they now produce these soundtracks for games. Mm-hmm. So he has a sizable collection of what we would think of as film soundtracks, but games have become so narrative now that it's, I guess, a natural progression.
Somewhere, someone has to be writing that music.
That's right. And some of it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It competes with the best of what's being written for films right now. So at the conference, you were not just there to take in a lot of the presentations, but you were actually presenting a paper, is that right?
Yeah, I presented a paper on a film music topic of mine called DeGuayo, No Mercy for the Losers, The Enduring Role of the Solo Trumpet in the Soundtrack of the Old West. Yeah. And here's how it came about. As you probably remember, several years ago, I wrote a book on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Of course.
Ennio Morricone. And as I was watching Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Once Upon a Time in the West, and being a trumpet player, I couldn't help but notice there were these beautiful trumpet solos near the end of the film at that final confrontation between the good, or almost good, guy and the bad guy. And I wrote a lot about that in my book, and my editor said, there's too much stuff on the trumpet, take it out. Okay, but you can use it somewhere else. And fast forward a few years, I was writing a chapter for a book on music in the Western for Routledge, and my editor said, there's too much stuff on the trumpet, take it out, but go ahead and use it somewhere else. So I finally had enough stuff on the trumpet to write a trumpet article, and it was actually published a couple years ago in the International Trumpet Guild Journal on this bugle call called DeGuayo, that there really is such a thing. It was
Which takes me right to my favorite film by Howard Hawks, Rio Bravo.
Mm-hmm. It was played, the authentic one was played by the Mexican Army under the command of General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna at the time of the Battle of the Alamo in 1836, and in 1959, in Rio Bravo, Dmitri Tiomkin wrote his own original DeGuayo, and the story, as it unfolds, John Wayne, the sheriff, is asking, what is that that music that trumpet player in the cantina is playing?
Wafting in over the night air.
And Colorado Ryan, Ricky Nelson, explains it's DeGuayo, the cutthroat song that they played at the Alamo. And a year later, Tiomkin was writing the music for John Wayne's The Alamo movie. So to keep that part of the storyline intact, he reused the same DeGuayo tune. And it's really well documented that Sergio Leone, the director of the spaghetti westerns, the Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns, wanted Tiomkin's DeGuayo in A Fistful of Dollars. And Morricone, the composer, said, that's unacceptable, I won't do it, I'll write my own instead.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, and that's very well documented. And of course, they repeated that formula, and it's been copied in later films as well. But what a lot of people didn't know is for Rio Bravo, they actually wanted a trumpet player named Rafael Mendez to play the trumpet solo. Because a year earlier, Mendez played a trumpet solo called El Gitano, the Gypsy, in a movie called Cowboy, starring Jack Lemmon and Glenn Ford. And my theory is that Rafael Mendez's performance influenced Tiomkin, and Tiomkin influenced Morricone, and Morricone influenced others. And what's really neat is, in 2004, there was a remake of The Alamo, starring Billy Bob Thornton, and the music you hear is the authentic DeGuayo bugle call that was really played
all
the
way
Mexican
back
Army
to the beginning,
1836.
Which brings us full circle.
Yeah. So my point is that Tiomkin's DeGuayo is more like the Rafael Mendez solo than it is the real DeGuayo mm-hmm. bugle call. And talking about it and showing these video clips is just, to me, it's a treat.
In the Westerns, so this all came about in the late 50s when this the use of the solo trumpet. Did you find any earlier examples of that in Western films?
There's plenty of examples of the bugle in Westerns. Fort Apache.
Of course, the John Ford films.
Mm-hmm.
Cavalry charges.
A bugler is one of the main characters. But as far as it really taking on the role of a solo instrument, a melodic instrument, other than just the bugle call you might expect to hear, in a Civil War film, it really started with Dmitri Tiomkin, and I believe he was influenced by Rafael Mendez from the 1958 cowboy
mm-hmm.
film.
Mm-hmm. When you were at the conference and taking on, I'm sure there was more topics than you could make it to, but did you have a favorite session or paper that you went to listen to?
Oh, now that's a good question. There was one on Max Steiner. Who was the topic of my dissertation in graduate school.
Great golden age composer.
Mm-hmm. And they were talking about key relationships, how a different theme will be in a different key. Maybe different characters will have a key. And sometimes if a character's thinking about another character, you'll hear that character's theme and the other person's key and so on. And some people think, well, I'm really not sure that those key relationships mean a lot to the audience. And Max Steiner was so meticulous with the way he manipulated keys, just like Richard Wagner or Richard Strauss in a tone poem would, that I really think in watching these films that I think it does make a difference. Whether you're musical or not, whether you're aware of the changes in key or not, I really think it has an effect on the audience.
Well, let's talk about the audience, because you and I are probably both experienced going to films and thinking, boy, that music was phenomenal in that film.
Yes.
And then walking out, and no one else in our party even recollects hearing it.
That is correct.
And I have to say, as a non-academic, I even have sometimes struggle to pay attention to the music mm-hmm. because our bandwidth, our mental bandwidth, is so taken up with so much other things happening in films. But I try to listen to the music mm-hmm. and how it's working with or against what our eyes are seeing. Is the reason that people often don't recollect the music in films, it's not because it's not important, it's that it's a very different type of composition than just about every other music form, which is very front and center. This is supposed to work on us in a different way.
Exactly. During Hollywood's golden era, the film directors really didn't want the music getting in the way. And composers were very skilled at keeping the music, you know, in that role where it can affect the viewing experience without being too obvious. And I really think that changed with these Italian Westerns and that foregrounded, overblown sound that really captures the audience's attention.
Sure.
There's no way to escape it. It's so much in the foreground, these brilliant timbres, the trumpet, the whistling, the unusual percussion instruments.
I also think of the spaghetti Westerns, too, as being so pure, almost like silent films, because they've really pared down the dialogue, and it's all about what you're seeing and the music and mm-hmm. how it goes together, and they've stripped out a lot of the expository elements of the film. So it gets back to a very pure type of cinema, something like Bernard Herrmann's relationship with Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. Often a lot of those sequences in Hitchcock films can go on 5, 10, 15 minutes with no dialogue.
Exactly.
It's just image and music.
Music.
And when we get to films like that, I think we do understand a little more in the moment how the two are working mm-hmm. together. I often like to think of music as you know, when you read a novel, you can get into the heads of people. It's very hard to do that in a film, and music often helps us ease us into the subconscious and the psychology of the characters that are there.
Exactly.
And cue us to figuring out how we're supposed to be feeling about what we're seeing,
mm-hmm.
even
yeah.
if we're not cognizant of it.
Right. Is that character happy or sad?
Right. And oftentimes it's used counterpointal. In that you're being told one thing and maybe your eyes are telling you to think something is happening on screen, but the music's maybe suggesting you don't fully understand what's going on because it's not working the way you think it
exactly.
should. with what you're seeing.
And some people think that's done by accident, but it's not. It's
no,
very,
no, no.
Very
These
well
are great artists
out.
That are working. And going back to Max Steiner, your classic golden age composer, that was to an age that we don't hear a lot of thematic scores where they would write music for particular characters that would accompany them through the film.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody writing like
oh,
that
yeah.
today?
It's called the leitmotif technique, right? And when we think of leitmotif, we think of Richard Wagner and 19th mm-hmm. century German opera.
When the hero comes on, he has a theme.
Exactly.
And when the bad person comes on, they have a theme.
Mm-hmm. And it fell out of fashion in the 50s and 60s because movie studios, many of whom owned record companies, discovered more money could be made if you have hit songs in your movie soundtrack. And that went on for quite some time, and it really started changing with Jaws in 1975 mm-hmm. and John Williams. And and when you heard the shark theme, even though you couldn't see the shark, you knew he was there.
Yeah, yeah. John Williams is one of the great users of that kind of mm-hmm. approach. Around that time, I think Basil Poledouris was writing big symphonic scores mm-hmm. too, and the pendulum was beginning to swing back.
Exactly.
Coppola began using big scores.
Mm-hmm.
I think even The Godfather, they wanted a soundtrack, basically, and he pushed back against the studio and demanded a score, not just contemporary music.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yep. So we could talk for hours about this subject.
We could.
But it's always fascinating when you come in. One last question. You know, as a musician, is this something you always appreciated, watching films, or did it grow on you over time?
I think it grew on me over time. In graduate school, I was a media arts minor, and it was like something that was part of what I had to do. And it really made me not just see a movie and hear a movie, but watch a movie and listen to a movie.
Mm.
And that's what I try to do in my music and film class that I'm teaching now. It's so easy just to watch the film and you hear the sounds and they affect you. But, you know, are you really listening? And that's mm. really one of my goals in that class. And when I do research like this, is to try to train people to listen to the movie because I really think it'll increase your enjoyment of the viewing experience.
Well, hopefully we'll all go off to the movies now and listen better after having talked to you. Thanks for coming in. It's always nice to speak with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely. I've been discussing music and film with UTEP Professor of Music, Dr. Charles Lineberger. Lineberger recently returned from the annual Music and the Moving Image Conference in New York, where he presented an article on the use of the solo trumpet in Western films, and he is currently teaching a course on music and film at UTEP. A final program note, my own film series, The Film Salon, will celebrate the work of Japanese New Wave director Seijin Suzuki, who passed away earlier this year, with a screening of his 1966 film, Tokyo Drifter, tonight at 7 p.m. at Alamo Drafthouse. Tickets are just $3. On Film's producer is Dennis Wu. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.